Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
First, I ask that everyone around our city, around the country, around the world, pray with us for those who are currently at U of L Hospital, injured, fighting for their lives as a result of another act of gun violence. And I want to thank all of the first responders, the brave and heroic men and women of LMPD, who, thanks to their efforts, quickly responded to the emergency call. And as you just heard from Deputy Chief Humphrey, without a doubt, their actions saved lives. There will be a lot more information we are able to provide as the day goes on. But I want everyone in this city to know that notwithstanding tragedies like today, when multiple people are killed by gun violence, notwithstanding tragedies when individuals are killed by gun violence, our community will continue to come together. We will find ways to love and support one another and the families and friends who have been directly impacted by these acts of gun violence. And we will come together as a community to work to prevent these horrific acts of gun violence from continuing here and around the state.
So, horrible news to start off the week. From Louisville, Kentucky, an individual shooting and killing. I think the latest is that there are 8 injured, including 2 officers, 4 fatalities from this, confirmed 4 fatalities. This is from WAVE-TV. And this, we also heard from Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear a little earlier, who mentioned that one of his friends, it was his bank, and it was a bank in downtown Louisville, and that at least a very close friend, as he described it, was involved in this. 4 people killed and 8 injured, including 2 police officers in Louisville, Kentucky. Apparently, everything began in the 8 a.m. hour, and police responded within 3 minutes. So a horrible way to start our week. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. And we are at the top of this first hour, and we're going to bring you all of the latest with this as well. Any kind of developments that we may get, we'll make sure that we have that, including any kind of confirmed updates. I know that there is now the Associated Press. The suspect was also neutralized by law enforcement. And earlier I had seen, and Carol Markowitz was the first to report this, that the individual, and this was later confirmed by police, and I listened to that live during the press conference, the individual had a connection to the bank and may have been an employee. Now, when I say may have been an employee, police are looking into whether or not the individual was an active, like, current employee or was a former employee of the bank. And so I'm sure that there's going to be more information that comes out about this as well. And like I said, I'll bring you all of the developments that we get of it. But just horrible news. Horrible news in Louisville, Kentucky, starting out. Now, the audio that we played coming into this, that was the mayor of Louisville and giving an kind of making his remarks before he had introduced the governor. And as we always do with any kind of situation like this, we always, you know, I like to bring you confirmed information because it's a weird kind of thing. We have affiliates. We have our affiliates in Louisville. And we want to make sure that we're bringing information to them as well. And I'll correct incorrect information, but I think that, you know, as we are having families notified and all of that, we're going to leave it at that. And we bring you confirmed information. So any developments that we get, apparently one police officer is in critical condition, according to one of the local news reports there, and is in surgery, I think now is the latest on that. So if you're just joining us, the news out of Louisville today, 4 fatalities, 8 injured, including 2 police officers. The individual, the killer, was neutralized by police. Now, we don't know anything other than what has been said already. As you know, I was saying, the individual police said that he had a connection to the bank and they were looking to see whether or not he was a current or previous employee. And I think they said it was 25-year-old male. That is the latest with that. Now, the mayor, when he was remarking, he kept, you know, saying acts of gun violence and acts of gun violence and acts of gun violence. And I have to say, whenever I hear, you know, whenever you have these horrific stories like this, I kind of feel like we're sort of disassociating the cause with the crime. And I realize that there is an intent by some political factions to make it about an inanimate object constantly. I mean, it feels like the phrase gun violence is like the new SUV ran people down, or the SUV. That was like, 15 years ago. And that was the big thing where it was people were railing against SUVs and it was the, you know, the SUV did this, the SUV did that. It's very similar in phrasing to me like that. So we'll bring you the latest with it. We're going to talk a little bit more about this, but as you know, information is coming in. There's also some of the other things that we're following too, additionally troubling, the latest in terms of foreign policy. I'm really curious, and we're going to talk to Stephen Yates about this later on in the program, as to whether or not the relationship, what is going on with the relationship between France and between the United States. Emmanuel Macron visiting Xi Jinping. We talked about this last week. Became one of the first, was the first European nation to kind of step aside, and it looked to they wanted exceptions. They wanted exceptions for certain energy. They wanted except they're looking into Chinese currency. There's a lot of concern because this was one of our very oldest allies, and so. Why Macron was saying also, too, and I'm pulling this statement up, his office was also in talking to the press saying that they don't want to get involved in conflicts that don't concern them. And the conflicts that don't concern him, I mean, Taiwan. And I just think it's interesting because hasn't France been the one to constantly beat the United States over the head in terms of funding to Ukraine? I mean, France is a heck of a lot closer. They've been the one to constantly beat the United States over the head. He said, quote, "I doesn't want to get caught up in crises." This is Macron's government that are not ours, like Taiwan. And this comes from Politico Europe. And at the same time, though, he is completely fine with pushing the United States to make security commitments above and beyond what European nations are even ready or willing to do. So there's some concern there. And we're going to discuss that also. There's a lot to hit today, and it's kind of a crazy day. As we're going to get into that, we have the ongoing 3-pronged attack on the destabilization to destabilize the United States, influence unity and economy. We're going to get into all of that, too. We have wokery. We have a bunch. But as I was saying, just coming out up this into this first hour, this horrible news coming out of Louisville, Kentucky. And a lot of people immediately are trying to look at firearm law, et cetera, et cetera. Apparently, officers also exchanged fire with the suspect. No one knows exactly what the suspect brought in, which I would kind of think that if, you know, before knowing what they brought in, I would want to know what the motive was. I think we should probably know a little bit more about, you know, why the individual, I mean, if it would sounds, if it was a disgruntled employee, this person having some connection to the bank. And as I said, police were looking to make the determination as to whether or not the individual was a current or former employee. 25 years old, though, that's a 25-year-old male. And I know his name, one name has already been identified online. I'm not going to do it on air, but just this in Louisville, Kentucky. And a lot of people have been pointing out firearm law, like I said, trying to implicate that as though it is some sort of, that it's culpable in this. We have no idea what was used. We have no idea this individual's background. We have no idea as to whether or not there were any kind of warning signs about this individual. There's a lot that is unknown, and it's not going to stop people from trying to politicize it that just then creates this cloud around trying to get any kind of information. All right, so a number of things still. This story coming out of the New York Post this morning, the FBI documents associate internet slang like based and red pill with quote unquote extremism. This was released this morning. Common internet lingo is being associated with violent extremism, says the FBI. I'm just curious as to why that would be, because I think that's like common phrasing for anything. I mean, red pill just means, I mean, it's like a play on words with the Matrix, you know, it's just like someone who has this like conservative awakening. But phrases like base, that's a Gen Z thing. Gen Z says this kind of stuff. So this is dumb. Is this what they're doing? Instead of, I don't know, maybe looking at like, potential suspects here. I'm just wondering, in mass casualty incidents. The oversight project of the Heritage Foundation said it used a FOIA request to expose FBI documents, reports the New York Post, that include glossaries showing that common internet slang has been flagged as an indication of, quote, involuntary, celibate, violent extremism, or racially or ethnically motivated violent extremism. I can't tell you how many people I see say based. They say it constantly. Constantly they say it. Everybody. Does not matter the age. I mean, it's mainly Gen Z, but it doesn't matter the sex. It doesn't matter the race. And that's supposed to be some sort of tip off for violent extremism. We're just going to just throw noodles at the wall and see what sticks. Is that what it is? This is nuts. We're gonna break this down. We're also going to get into this is going to be a headline that's going to affect the economy. Ports in California. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend. Long Beach, California, ports in Los Angeles have closed due to lack of workers. So if you thought the supply chain issue has been rough, just wait. There you go. Got a lot coming up. So we have a lot to hit today. Breathe life into your own backyard this spring with FastGrowingTrees.com. From shade trees to fresh fruit to privacy hedge plants, let FastGrowingTrees.com help you plant your dream garden with their expert advice and fast, reliable shipping. FastGrowingTrees.com's plant experts curate thousands of easy-to-grow plants, shrubs, and tree varieties for your unique climate. And they understand that sometimes it's hard to know which plants will do best. No problem. With FastGrowingTrees.com, you get customized recommendations based on your specific needs, and they're always available to help keep your plants growing healthy through every season. Their website is easy to use, and the shipping's fast. With FastGrowingTrees, 30-day alive and thrive guarantee, you know everything will look great fresh out of the box. So join over 1.5 million happy Fast Growing Trees customers. Visit FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana now and get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana. That's FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So apparently it's going to be time for an eclipse in like a year. There's going to be a solar eclipse that sweeps across North America. It will take place on April 8th, 2024. So I know you're so excited about it more than anything else on God's green earth. So block out your calendars, everybody. The moon's going to cast a shadow across a stretch of the United States, Mexico, and Canada, plunging millions of people into midday darkness. And that's, folks, when the monsters will come from within the core of the earth. I'm slightly joking. We're smart. All right. Also, Pennsylvania officials are saying that you should not eat fish from these waters. This comes out of WTAJ, the CBS affiliate there. The Department of Environmental Protection has issued a fish consumption advisory for several bodies of water across the Commonwealth. These advisories are typically due to mercury, dioxins, some other stuff being present in fish populations. It can cause, you know, heavy metal poisoning and all kinds of horrible stuff. But they have some advisories severely limiting on how much you consume. I'm sure it has absolutely nothing to do with anything that leaked out any tankers or anything like that. But they're just saying that nothing from the Shenango, and I'm going to mess this up, so don't hate me, Pennsylvanians. Shenango River, Mercer, and Lawrence counties due to the what they call the PCB risks. And those stand for a long, long medical term that have lots of consonants in it that we're not going to attempt today because it's Monday and it's not even 1 o'clock yet. Also, this, that actually is kind of, man, because fishing's fun. China is simulating hitting key targets on Taiwan. The drills, which Beijing has called a stern warning to the self-governing island, are a response to Taiwan's president visiting the United States last week and meeting with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. So they simulated an encirclement of the island, and the U.S. Urged China to show restraint. See, again, why I couldn't be in office? I would simulate complete and total turning China, the country, into glass. I would just have simulated that, right? And raising it, and then, I'm just saying, that's what I would have done. But this is why I can't be in office. First anti-aging pills are going to hit shelves in 2028. Experts predict a Silicon Valley racist to conquer death. I can't think anything more annoying than living forever. ChatGPT boss Sam Altman has invested $180 million in this anti-aging biotech firm. Jeff Bezos invested $3 billion. And so apparently it's a pill that's going to, I don't know so much as be an extension of life, but kind of stave off aging. I think it's kind of creepy, to be real. We got a lot more on the way. The latest with Louisville. Stay with us. If you're a bacon lover, today is your day. So whether alongside your eggs for breakfast, on a BLT, or wrapped around a filet, bacon is free for a year at Good Ranchers. Subscribe to get 24 ounces of Applewood smoked bacon added to each delicious box for a year. That's over $200 worth of bacon free. This is 100% American, high-quality bacon sourced from local farms with no added hormones or antibiotics. To subscribe, simply find your perfect box in the Good Ranchers curated selection of pasture-raised meat and wild-caught seafood. Select the frequency that works best for you, and then enjoy fewer trips to the meat aisle and more flavor at dinner. As long as you stay subscribed, your price will never increase. That's the Good Ranchers price lock guarantee. Subscribe today at goodranchers.com for free bacon in every box for a year. Use code Dana to get an additional $20 off your first order. Get the best meat America has to offer. Visit goodranchers.com. That's goodranchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
Sometimes it's tough to unpack the craziness that is the daily news cycle. The good news is, that's her job. Listen to The Dana Show on the Odyssey app or watch on YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV Channel 347.
Well, I'm a businesswoman. I had a really clear job to do when I took over Bud Light. And it was, this brand is in decline. It's been in decline for a really long time. And if we do not attract young drinkers to come and drink this brand, there will be no future for Bud Light. So I had this super clear mandate. It's like, we need to evolve and elevate this incredibly iconic brand. And my, what I brought to that was a belief in, okay, what does evolve and elevate mean? It means inclusivity. It means shifting the tone. It means having a campaign that's truly inclusive and feels lighter and brighter and different and appeals to women and to.
I was going to mute myself and say something really, really snarky to Kane here just a second ago. First off, welcome back to the program, Dana Lash here. That is the new, what is it? That's Bud Light's VP of marketing, Alyssa Heinerscheid.
That sounds right.
That works. That's why they suck. They got a chick running it. This lady, I mean, she looks like she enjoys a beer as much as Elizabeth Warren does, which is to say not at all. I was going to make a joke about beer goggles, Kane.
Oh, yeah.
Let your mind unpack that. It's what I was. It's what I was going to go for. She says that they're trying to attract younger drinkers. You know, you can attract younger drinkers without insulting women. Because guess who also likes beer? Oh, women. Women also like beer. And men like beer. Because I don't think that they're going for either of those demographics with the way partnering with a guy who's making fun of women. She just seems like she's entirely clueless. She's one of those people who checks the boxes. She goes through all of the program, right? She checks the boxes. She gets this degree. She does this. And then she gets the position, but that she has no soul for. And I think that's a huge problem. You need people in marketing that actually get it and get the product and have passion and have a soul. I mean, of course, you're talking about a beer that masquerades as beer. It's trans beer. It's really what it is. Oh, I can say that now. They are. But I don't even honestly, do you think that, as Kane says, fake chicks, like the dudes pretending to be chicks, they don't drink beer. I mean, the Dylan Mulvaney guy doesn't act like any woman that I've ever seen before in my life. Who runs around in their muddy backyard with heels? Nobody. That's the whole point. Nobody acts like this. He's acting what he thinks that girls act like. Did you see the photo? I accidentally saw it. I wasn't looking for anything, but I was reading Daily Mail, which is a trash website that I hate. But I clicked on a link and it took me there. And in the sidebar was a picture of him taking his trash can or his recycling, whatever, from the curb. He walks to the damn curb with his purse. Who does that? And he had a 5 o'clock shadow. He didn't have all of his makeup on, but he was taking his trash can, picking it up from the curb, bringing it back towards his house, and he had a 5 o'clock shadow. I mean, you can sit here and you wear lipstick and you can do all this other stuff, but you're not going to sit here and fake your body out of growing stubble, okay? It's not going to happen. I mean, I could just, in my mind, I mocked up a Gillette ad. So this is why this doesn't work. It's why it doesn't work. He came out with something saying he just is so down this week. He's so down. Nobody cares. You know what? There are serious problems that are happening in the world. Juan's got, if you're listening to the program across the country, we also have the simulcast of the program that you can watch on YouTube, Facebook, and channel 347 on DirecTV. And there's a picture of him taking literally his purse to go bring up his trash can. He's got 5 o'clock shadow. He's got to shave himself every day. That's like dermaplaning to the extreme. Not the same thing. It's a joke and it's offensive. And he's, I'm such a victim, such a victim. All right, a couple of things. We've been following the latest coming out of Louisville and bringing you any developments that we get from that. If you tuned in to the top of the hour, we were going over the horrific news of this shooting that took place in a bank in downtown Louisville. And I think that they had confirmed that there were the fatalities, what there were. There were the 8 injured total, including 2 police officers, one who is in critical condition, reading a couple of local news reports here that I have opened up, in critical condition, getting surgery right now. And the others, I think that there were, and those were the ones, by the way, who had exchanged fire with the killer. And the killer was neutralized, but it has not come out yet whether he did it or the police did it. And at 8 people critically injured, I think it was 4 fatalities were the total thus far. And we'll bring you any other confirmed developments on that. But there is nothing known about what he brought in, except the only thing that we do know is that police had confirmed that he had a connection with the bank, and they were trying to determine whether or not he was a current or previous employee, which I could pretty much figure they probably know by now. I'm sure that they knew that, found that out very quickly. So we'll bring you any developments on that story as well. Also, one of the other things that we've been watching is this, and we're going to talk to Stephen Yates about this, is what's going on with France and with China. And with regards to France, you had Emmanuel Macron, who visited Xi Jinping last week, took one of the heads of the EU with him. And he had this piece where there's a speech that he, remarks that he had made, where he had said, and this comes by way of Politico Europe, where he was saying that Europe must resist the pressure to become America's followers, and that the great risk Europe faces is getting caught up in crises that are not ours. He's playing the part of Xi Jinping's stooge incredibly well. He says that Europe has to reduce its dependency on the United States and avoid getting dragged into a confrontation between China and the U.S. over Taiwan. He gave an interview when he was flying back from his visit in China. It was European Politico. He spoke with two French journalists for about 6 hours or a few hours after he spent 6 hours with Xi Jinping during his trip. And he said that his theory of strategic autonomy for Europe, which he intimated led by France to become a third superpower, he said the great risk that Europe faces is, quote, gets caught up in crises that are not ours, which prevents it from building its strategic autonomy. He said the paradox would be overcome with panic. We believe we are just America's followers. The question Europeans need to answer, is it in our interest to accelerate a crisis on Taiwan? No. So are they Nazis? Wait, can I just stop here? He's a Nazi, right? That makes him a Nazi? Because if you don't get involved in a conflict that other people might want you to, then that means you're a Nazi. That's what I was told. That's how the definition has been redefined within the past, you know, several months.
Learn something new every day.
I know. I mean, it's a fluid definition, you know, the Nazi thing, apparently. Because it can also mean if you don't like universal health care, 10 years ago, that meant you were a Nazi. If you don't like taxpayer-funded, mediocre, crap, Canadian-type health care, then that meant that you, yes, I said it because it's bad, that meant that you were a Nazi, apparently. So now, I think that this is so, it is so easy to talk such an amazing game when you have been the recipient of so much of the United States' protection. I mean, who hasn't been begging the United States to get involved and to send more this to Ukraine, more money, more munitions, more, send some tanks, send some this? A faction that is part, including Emmanuel Macron. And now he says, and I also think it presupposes that the United States would react in such a way. I mean, at some point, we're going to have that conversation on the right about getting involved. What would the United States do if China got involved, or China decided to, instead of doing a drill, actually carry out what they would like to do against Taiwan, to Hong Kong, Taiwan, so to speak. And the right's going to have that discussion. Out of the two entities that everyone talks about, whether it be, you know, China or Russia, China has absolutely imperialistic tendencies, and they do have the means and will to spread them. Whereas Russia is already in its sunset. It's just sort of languishing in terms of their government. I mean, Vlad Putin has some very good ideas about how he would like to go out and conquer the world. He's not going to be able to accomplish any of it. I mean, he's given some remarks. He's written some editorials. I mean, it's a pipe dream. We've been down this road. Communism's a joke. So I don't think that they don't have the economic ability to do it. They don't even have the resources. They don't even have the manpower to do. And honestly, what does it even look like? He wants to rebuild the Soviet Union. Do you realize what a ridiculous pipe dream that is? It's never going to happen. China, on the other hand, that's a scary prospect because they do have the resources. And they do have the manpower. It's just, I think they're just waiting for their time. We're going to talk to Stephen Yates about this here coming up. But it is, that's the concern. And it's wild to see one of our oldest allies stepping back from that. Any kind of partner saying that, oh, we don't want to be America's followers. Well, you've been happy to have America as your bank. You've been happy for the United States to not just pay their fair share, but everyone's fair share with regard to NATO. You've been happy to pay just above the 2% GDP required for NATO membership. You've been entirely happy about all of that. So I think you need to make a selection, because no one's asking France to be America's follower. Yeah, they loved our NATO money. Here's the reality of the situation. I gave you an example I think it was in headlines. I have this, and I'm sorry, I'm looking back on my rundown because I had this, the headline that we had about the ports in Los Angeles and in Long Beach. You know, they're struggling to find workers. I read this piece over the weekend as well that was talking about U.S. manufacturing. And they're trying to say that, oh, manufacturing's back. Not really. Wall Street Journal had the piece, America's back in the factory business. Record spending on manufacturing construction heralds a made in the U.S. rebound. We're not there. But they're saying it's stoked by green energy incentives. So what does that mean? It's predicated upon government funding. That's not a real bounce back. Concerns about foreign supply chains, etc. But it's about, and again, I want to point you back. It's led by this, stoked by this green energy incentivizing these companies. That's not sustainable long term. And because of the expense, I don't even think it's sustainable short term. What a weird piece to have at Wall Street Journal. No, it's not back. You know, after Pearl Harbor, and I think I've shared this story with you before, I was trying to remember how quickly our ships were rebuilt, the damaged ships, how they were, the damage was remedied, certain vessels reconstructed. We had an amazing manufacturing capability in the United States. I mean, we were able to turn around so much, so fast. It stunned the Japanese when we put those ships back out at sea. They were stunned. They were stunned at the Battle of Coral Sea. I'm massively fascinated by World War II history, particularly in the Pacific, because my grandfather was on the USS Alabama. And they were shocked that America had the capability to turn that around so quickly. That should have been the first warning sign. We had a massive manufacturing muscle. And then when our men were fighting, our women, people like my great-grandmother came up and worked in the factory. She was legit an actual riveter. She worked in a factory, and that's what she did. She worked with metals and did all that. There's some old pictures of her. She was one of those women. We cannot do that today. We don't have that capability. You can't go to war with the entity that you rely on for most of your goods. Do you see how we're in this crazy catch-22? And it's getting worse, particularly with the push of green energy, because that just makes us even more dependent in more ways than just on the non-essentials, or even more essentials like antibiotics. Now you're talking about depending on them for the minerals required to run the equipment in our military, to run our infrastructure. But that's the point. As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential Speech Digest in Primus, and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Dana Lash with you, towards the end of this first hour, heading towards our second hour broadcast. Now, coming up, we'll bring you all of the latest developments about Louisville, the tragedy that took place there this morning. And we're also going to discuss this case of Daniel Perry. Have you heard about this? He is the sergeant who was driving for, Army sergeant, he was convicted. He was defending himself and got convicted of murder for it. It was during a Black Lives Matter protest with the George Floyd unrest. And a man named Garrett Foster, and they have like video footage of this, like came up and he pointed his rifle at Daniel Perry. Daniel Perry thought he was going to shoot him, and so he fired in self-defense. So he was charged with murder. And unbelievably, the individual who that was killed, this Garrett Foster, had a history of literally threatening people with his rifles at BLM protests. I mean, repeatedly. I mean, numerous times. Anyone else, they would have been cited with actually a felony. I mean, if you're drawn down, if you're pointing your the barrel of your gun at someone, that's a felony. And nothing apparently happened to this guy. And he'd always apparently did this quite a bit. So why is he now? Greg Abbott said he's going to get involved. Texas has a little bit of a different process when it comes to pardons, but we're going to discuss some of this coming up next hour. Stick with us. You've heard me talk about my friends at Kel-Tec for years, and it's because I really believe in them as a company and as innovators. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond, like with the Kel-Tec P50, a revolutionary award-winning pistol that packs a punch in a compact package. The Kel-Tec P50 is perfect for home defense, for range shooting, or just even having some fun. And with its top-mounted Picatinny rail, you can easily attach your favorite optics or accessories to make it truly yours. Whether you are a seasoned shooter or you're just starting out, the Kel-Tec P50 is the perfect pistol for anyone looking for power and precision in a compact and easy-to-use package. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond. Learn more about the P50 pistol at KeltecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
This is awful. I have a very close friend that didn't make it today. And I have another close friend who didn't either, and one who's at the hospital that I hope is going to make it through. So when we talk about praying, I hope people will. For those that we are hoping can make it through the surgeries that they're going through. And then we've got to do what we have done these last 3 years after everything. We've got to wrap our arms around these families. And to everybody who needs it, don't be afraid to get some help. Our bodies and our minds are not meant to go through these types of tragedies. And so I hope that all the brave officers that stepped into the line of fire, that are worried about one of their fellow officers, will reach out for help when they need it. I hope every one of those bank employees and folks in that building, one that I know well, and my AG campaign was out of that building. I know virtually everyone in it. That's my bank.
That is Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, who spoke a little bit earlier today about this tragedy that unfolded this morning at a bank in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome back to the program. Top of our second hour, and we're following all of the latest developments in that. Eight injured, two of them police, one critical who was in surgery a little earlier, and four fatalities in this. The individual, the suspect, we don't know yet from police as to whether or not the individual, the police said that he was neutralized, but we don't have any insight yet as to what that means, if police did it or if the killer killed himself. So we're waiting to get more clarification on that as well. We don't know anything about weapons used yet. We do know, however, that this individual, 25-year-old male, had a connection to the bank. And at the time when police first spoke to the public, and this was a little over an hour ago, they had said that this individual had a connection to the bank, and they were looking to see whether or not he was a previous or current employee, which I would imagine that they know now. So we'll bring you any of the latest developments on this, and I'm sure that this is going to be something Corinne Jean-Pierre discusses during the White House press availability today, their regular daily press conference. So we'll bring you anything on that. Now, in other news, later on, we're going to talk to Stephen Yates about all the developments with foreign policy with regards to France and China and domestically here in the Republic of Texas. A lot of discussion over what many, including yours truly, describe as a case of self-defense. It all began back during the George Floyd unrest. And I don't know if you heard the story of this Army sergeant who was an Uber driver, 35 years old. And there's video of a lot of this was in Austin, Texas. There's a lot of video of this. Some of the stuff that was happening at the time. And this was back in the summer of 2020. Perry, who's now 37, the Army sergeant was driving for Uber. He was in Austin. He was in his vehicle on the road. And the video shows people in the streets during all of the Floyd riots in the summer of 2020. So he's driving his rideshare vehicle through downtown Austin on July 25th and was at a stoplight and found himself in the middle of a BLM protest. And the story is that one of the individuals, a man named Garrett Foster, raised and pointed his rifle, an AK-47, at Perry. And Perry, thinking that he was about to be shot and killed, because if you remember, there literally were numerous examples of this happening at BLM riots in various cities where you would have people who would show up and brandish, actually point, you know, the barrel of their gun at people. And it's all on video. This is not like, you know, this is not anecdotal. It's on video. And so Perry just sees a guy pointing a rifle at him. And so he fires in self-defense and five times. Now, Perry immediately turned himself in, cooperated with authorities, and gave them, you know, told them everything that they wanted to know. Prosecutors said Perry had plenty of choices. He could have driven away before he fired his gun. Apparently, these prosecutors didn't watch the video that I watched. There was a herd of people in front of his car. What was he supposed to do? They were going to get him anyway, either way. If he would have gone forward, he would have hit people and they would have charged him for that. Because Austin is the turd in the punch bowl that is the Republic of Texas. They would have gotten him for that. There were tons of people, again, on video, which we're not going to show you. You can find it online if you want to watch. But there were people standing in front of his car. He's going to mow through those people. And by the way, Texas is a stand your ground law. Why the hell is it incumbent upon the victim? And I think it's disgusting that any prosecutor would blame the victim for being a victim when he's defending his own life because said victim didn't flee, as though the individual with the rifle couldn't pursue. Again, there were a herd of people in the street. Texas has very, very strong stand your ground laws. Somebody comes up to my car and points a rifle at me, I'll drop you. As would anyone with the sense to save their own life. Now, the prosecutors were trying to say, oh, he posted on social media how he was opposed to protesters. Which, in the prosecutor's mind, their weak argument was, that's the same thing as wanting them to die. If you're opposed to protesters, and by the way, most people were opposed to the violence and the looting and the blocking of streets and everything that we saw for the entire summer. It's one of the reasons why Republicans won so many offices. They try to sit here and make it out about, oh, this is a guy who couldn't keep his anger under control. The way that they, I mean, these were just poor prosecutors, but this is Austin. You had this Garrett Foster guy. He was wearing, carrying an AK-47, a club, a knife. He had a vest on under his shirt. Perry was just driving his Uber in shorts and flip-flops. They even brought that in. This was such a crazy case. He was indicted for murder, Perry was, by a Soros-funded DA. And there have been a lot of stories about the amount of money that Soros has donated to this DA. And what's crazy is that there have been so many accusations of corruption in this. So the lead detective, the affidavit from this lead detective said that the DA directed him to, quote, remove exculpatory information that I had intended to present to the grand jury during my testimony. The detective is accusing the Soros DA of acting criminally. In his affidavit, he writes, quote, I am the lead investigating detective in the above referenced case. Prior to the grand jury presentation in this case, I had several conversations with the DA's office regarding the presentation of exculpatory evidence related to Daniel Perry. It became clear to me that the DA's office did not want to present evidence to the grand jury that would be exculpatory to Daniel Perry and or to show that the witness statements obtained by the family of Garrett Foster and or their attorneys were inconsistent with prior interviews such witnesses gave the police and or the video of the incident in question. I had also wanted to present various statements from the complainant in court, too, where she never once suggested that Daniel Perry intentionally and knowingly threatened her with imminent bodily injury by driving a motor vehicle in her direction. He said the DA's office also made me remove an animation from Daniel Perry's driving the night of the incident, coordinated with his cell phone records that would have refuted the deadly conduct charge ultimately returned by the grand jury. Another Soros-backed DA. They want to criminalize self-defense. Now, Ken Paxton has said that it called the DA rogue prosecutor. They must be stopped, etc. A lot of people are demanding that Greg Abbott get in and pardon this guy. Why isn't Greg Abbott pardoned him? Now, I've had credit to give Greg Abbott, and I've had criticism of Greg Abbott before. But one matter to clear up is that Texas does not operate, as it relates to pardons, the same way that other states may operate. The Constitution of the Republic of Texas, and Abbott noted this in his response, and this is absolutely accurate because these have been news stories before, particularly with other governors, that they are limited in their authority and what they can do. So the governor can request from the Board of Pardons and Paroles, they can request that the board make a determination if a person should be granted a pardon. But ultimately, and that's what the Texas Constitution does allow for the governor to do. But the governor can't make the decision. It is limited. The decision belongs to the Board of Pardons and Paroles. The governor only has the authority to act on a recommendation from the board. But the governor can request that they review. And so he said that he has made the request and instructed the board to expedite the review. And then he adds, I look forward to approving the board's pardon recommendation as soon as it hits my desk. He also says he's prioritized reigning in rogue DAs and the Texas legislature is working on laws to achieve that goal. Now, the exculpatory evidence, I mean, it is amazing because people were like, well, why wasn't this, apparently presented? Well, it's apparently now we know because the lead detective is saying the DA was making them keep this out. When you see stuff like this, do you want to know how you get vigilantism? You get vigilantism with this. You're going to get more people acting in place of law enforcement, not fewer people. You're going to get more. Because they do not trust the justice system. I mean, I don't trust it in Austin. There's no way. I don't go to Austin. I don't go to Austin because you can be a Black Lives Matter protester and you can repeatedly point your gun at people and nothing happens to you. Oh, case in point, that individual, Garrett Foster, did just that. Austin American Statesman has the receipts. This individual had a history of pointing his gun at people. They found 24 sets of fingerprints all over Perry's car showing that, no, it was not a peaceful protest. If you watch the video, they surrounded his car. This Garrett Foster guy, he had been warned previously by officers. Police even testified during the trial that they had warned Foster at previous protests. Now, in Texas, one of the reasons why people pushed for the concealed carry law is that if you were in a grocery store and you were carrying, and actually this had to do mainly with bikers. This is one of the people who was advocating for the concealed carry back before it passed. Like if you were in a grocery store, if you were on your bike, your shirt blows up, you're carrying, that's considered brandishing. On the old statute, the way that it used to read before the changes. But this is okay. This guy repeatedly pointing his rifle. You point your rifle at someone and they think that you're going to kill them and they shoot back. How is that their fault? Sergeant Daniel Perry not only deserves a pardon, but he deserves an apology. Americans have had it. They're done supporting companies that rake in hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of dollars, while trashing the country that made their success possible. Until recently, we had to take it. But companies like Patriot Mobile are building a whole new economy, one which embraces the values that made America the greatest country on earth. Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offers dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. Plus, they offer a coverage guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch to a different network for free without changing carriers. With Patriot Mobile, their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them right now at 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana. We should stand together and support companies that share our values. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
A transgender cyclist was booted from the women's championship after female competitors threatened a boycott. This is the way. Sports' governing body rules the cyclist is not currently compliant with its regulations. The biologically male cyclist identifies as female and was barred from competing over the weekend in a women's championship race. The individual formally competed against men and was cut from the championship on Saturday. Now, this former competitive male cyclist who now identifies as female, this weekend would have been his first race against women. He only began hormone therapy last year, according to the BBC. So he was determined to be ineligible. And all of the other female cyclists were threatening a boycott if they did not kick him out. That is the way, ladies. That's the way forward. Because this is only going to be solved by women. Men ain't going to fix this. Women got to fix it. Also, moving to this, the Masters, Tiger Woods had withdrawn. Play had resumed. He had a foot injury. And he looked like he was in serious pain. By the way, did you see the tree fall too? Yeah. It was crazy. No one was injured. A massive tree because they had storms and all that fell. Oh my gosh. It was all nuts. Burglars cut a hole and robbed a Seattle Apple. They cut a hole and tunneled into an Apple store and stole over 500 phones. They cut through into the bathroom. And it was it's described by police as a brazen heist. They got all with $500,000 of merchandise, 436 iPhones. They also had some other devices. It looked like a pro job, I got to tell you. I mean, not that I know what a professional, robbery job looks like, but they cut legit through a wall. The dad staged a McDonald's blockade. This is in Britain. At a McDonald's after his delivery turned up without any fries or drinks. So it was in Kent, and the dad went and he clogged up the queue in the drive-thru, stayed for about 2.5 hours having a protest because his fries and soda was not delivered. They don't call them fries over there. They're chips, technically, right? Kinda? Fry still? Stay with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
There was a pretty startling split screen. You had 1,000 kids in Nashville out there protesting the lack of action on gun reform measures. Mm-hmm. Well, you had Governor DeSantis signing a bill on permitless carry behind closed doors. Yeah, what did you make of that?
Scared to death.
Who is he scared of?
Scared of the people. Scared
the
of the
people
public.
In Florida?
Yeah, that overwhelmingly opposed that position. But I think the majority of NRA members, probably opposed that position. No background checks.
That's a lie.
No background. None.
What a moron.
Really? I mean, no training. Why would we do that with weapons of war?
First off, Gavin Newsom is lying to you. And I don't think a governor, if he doesn't understand the whole idea of background checks, by the way, that's controlled federally. And if Gavin Newsom doesn't know that, then perhaps he should refrain from speaking on the subject. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, bottom of the second hour. The California governor is ignoring all of the crime, needles, and feces in his own state, and he believes that DeSantis, even though he hasn't announced anything, and they've been passing and scoring win after win in Florida on behalf of voters, he's obsessed. He's absolutely obsessed. He's been talking nonstop about him for how long? How long now has Gavin Newsom been? I don't think he's on the same page as the rest of the Democrat Party, really. It's kind of interesting. But he's accusing DeSantis. I don't know if you've seen photos of DeSantis signing the open carry bill. He had like a herd of people in his room and they did photos and they had cameras. So I don't understand what he's talking about. Did he not see these things? It's this, it's on, you know how we saw them? They were on this thing called the internet. Maybe Newsom can say it with us. Internet. It's very easy. You can go and find the pictures online. I mean, didn't look in secret, you know, especially when they're all like pushing them out there with the press and everything else. No, they seem pretty happy about it. Voters seem like they were pretty happy about it as well, because it was also one of the things that DeSantis had pushed when he was running for re-election. And if Gavin Newsom thinks that that's somehow that voters don't support it, yeah, didn't seem like that at the election. Here's the thing. Republicans in Florida have won by margins that Democrats in California win by. Now, consider that. I'll say it again. Republicans in Florida have won by margins that Democrats have won in California. Now, here's the difference. Florida's growing. California is not. In fact, California is decreasing in terms of population size. It's so bad there. Nobody even wants to stay because of the weather. They leave. They're all leaving. I have more friends than I can count on both my hands that have left within the past few years, left California and have moved. They either moved to Texas. They moved to Texas, Tennessee, or Florida. That's where they go. I mean, out of the families that we know personally, I know at least 14. I'm trying to count in my head really fast, like separate families that are of like people we know in person that are friends that have left California with their kids, have left. No, not kidding. And then if they have any family there, we have some folks whose their family just started trickling in. We there are some folks that we know who moved to Texas and then their family came, like the parents came and then the brother and sister came. So like the entire families have relocated. They don't even want to stay because of the weather anymore. And that used to be like the big thing that everyone talked about. Oh, well, it's so nice here though with the weather. No, but that's the big difference here. And Gavin Newsom, I'll say this. He is the only one, and I don't mean this as a compliment. I mean it as sort of just a word of warning to Republicans. He is the only one in the Democrat Party that is recognizing this. I've been watching the way that Democrats are handling the lead up into 2024. They're not in campaign mode. Now, maybe that's because they feel like they have settled upon Biden. Maybe they're waiting to see Newsom, who can stick his foot in his mouth constantly. They're waiting to see if he can, you know, actually do this and hang on a bit. But I will say, Democrats, this is really unusual. Now, my other half of my mind here, because I think, you know, it's unusual they're so quiet. But then are they, though? Because think about this. With the trials, right? With the judge in New York. Do Democrats have to campaign if they can get all these bureaucratic agencies to do it for them? If they can lean on tech suppression? I mean, then they don't even have to campaign, do they? Huh. It's very convenient. And the media is a help for them. But I will say, Newsom is the only one who seems to understand the threat that Florida poses against Democrats. Like case in point, let me pull this up. Like DeSantis is now it's like one of the strictest immigration policies statewide in the country that they're pushing right now. Let me pull this up. This is after they're doing a whole bunch of stuff with taxes. They're eliminating in-state college tuition for people who are not here legally. Now, he's getting some criticism from Capitol L libertarians because it includes beneficiaries of the DACA program. Now, you remember the DACA program, right? There was about, I think in Florida, I think they said there were like 12,000 DACA recipients who benefited from in-state tuition, discount, you know, in-state tuition. And the DACA program, if your parents brought you here illegally and you were a child, you know, obviously children, you know, are sort of at the mercy of their parents, where they go and how they go, whether it's illegal or not. And DACA was a policy that was implemented to keep deport the children that were brought over, essentially. And so what he's looking to do is to remove that. If you're not here legally, then you're not going to get access to in-state tuition rates. I agree with that. And here's why. Because if you're here long enough to be applying for in-state tuition for universities and colleges and et cetera and doing all this stuff, then you can apply to become a citizen of the United States. Now, I'm totally fine with having discussions about how to make it less bureaucratic and more streamlined, because I know people who have waited one of my friends has been here for 11 years and just literally last year became an American citizen. One of our very good friends has been here for longer than that. And, you know, our kids are friends and just and became an American citizen just this year. So, and going through the whole process, like did everything that it takes forever. And I get that there's a lot of bureaucracy. I was actually talking to another friend who is engaged and was having a significant other go through the whole thing. And she was just sort of like, I just don't even know if I want. It's just like, because I hear all these stories about people who do everything right and then they wait forever. And then you have people who come across the border illegally and then they get expedited. They get pushed to the front of the line. And I completely understand that, because the policy that the administration supports is rewarding that breaking the system. It rewards breaking the system. It rewards line hopping. It rewards the preference and advocacy of one group over another. And in this case, it's the people who violate the law as opposed to the people who demonstrate respect for the nation and follow it. And so I think this is completely, the capital L libertarians are losing their minds. Oh, I guess he doesn't love freedom. I mean, what's hard for you to understand about this? He's wanting people, if you can apply to college, have you applied to college? It's a pain in the ass to go through all of it, to go through the scholarships, to go through everything else. And if you can do all of that, you can apply to become an American citizen, particularly since you're protected from deportation under DACA. So there's no fear of, well, I can't do that because they'll deport me. That's literally what DACA was designed to not do, to have done. So that argument's out the window. If you can apply and you can go through all of these, then you can apply to become a citizen at the same time or even before then. I mean, for crying out loud, it's not difficult to start that process. Now, the bureaucracy afterwards, fine, have a discussion about how to better streamline it. I'm all for that. I mean, I would like to have people who understand what communism is and want to come here legally from other countries so we don't implement communism here. I'm totally fine with that. Adding more Republican voters. But you have to do it legally. You have to follow the process. And there are more incentives to not than there are incentives to follow said process. Now, this will probably, I mean, I don't see this not passing. I mean, Republicans have super majorities in the entirety of Florida's legislature, which is wild. It's very different from this, like the majorities that you see in Texas, because I have people all the time that are like, well, wait a minute, Texas is Republican. Why is it? Are you not able to do this? Just because they have an R by their name. Like we have that, like right now, one of the things that they're looking at in Texas, they're looking at some legislation to make it to where you can cram as many houses basically on an acre as possible and reduce lot size and, you know, all of this and steamroll over these communities. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, they had a fight to get open carry. They had a fight to get a concealed carry. They had a fight to push towards lowering property taxes. I mean, it's crazy. You would think it would be a lot easier in Florida. Oh my gosh. It's like turning into the land. Florida's turning into the land of milk and honey. As someone who came to Texas over 10 years ago, I don't want any other state to beat Texas. You know what I mean? So I feel a little competitive. I look at what Florida's got going on and I'm like, wait a minute. Can we offset their ocean, like the all the ocean access that they have more than us, with more freedom? Like, is it possible to do that? Like, can we do? I mean, I want to beat people in more than just brisket, you know? Just saying. So this this move that he's doing, this is a good move. But so, as I was saying, the whole problem with Democrats is that they're, by and large, it almost kind of seems like the majority of the Democrat Party is not really, they're not really focusing on Florida. It may seem like it to you, but in honesty, if you compare what they're giving their attention to as opposed to what they should give their attention to, if they really are strategizing, it's interesting. And Gavin Newsom, he is the only up-and-comer in the Democrat Party who can actually go for elected office. I don't even think that they have any governors that have won by enough margin to be safe bets. And California is the Democrat version of Florida, but it's shrinking. They're losing all of their people. They have crises of energy and economy and everything. And so this is why Newsom is trying to cover this DeSantis space. He really wants to make it look like it's a contest between him and DeSantis. It's a very interesting, it's an interesting dichotomy. But I don't know. I mean, I just don't think he's successful. I don't think he's is he actually even attracting or appealing to a lot of people on the left, especially people who understand what his policies have done in California? Because I see Democrats that are just kind of, they shrug him off. I don't know. I'm really interested in that whole, you know, I think if it was any other Democrat besides Newsom, I think they would be doing well in California. It doesn't even matter who the person is. I almost wonder if they wouldn't be doing better in California if it wasn't Newsom.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
A naked, greased up Florida man is accused of breaking into two homes and then jumping in the pool. Now, shockingly, deputies believe the suspect was under the influence of unknown substances. I know we're all shocked. The man, Blake Tachman, accused of breaking into two homes. Police, I mean, they had the body cameras from the deputies, which is kind of amazing. I don't even know if we can, I mean, there's blurred out, but he's on a trampoline at one point, totally, in his birthday suit. I can't, man. So he broke into two homes, tried to evade deputies by jumping in a swimming pool and onto a trampoline, all while naked and greasy, according to sheriff's officials. They responded around 2 a.m. to reports of a burglary. 34-year-old Blake Tachman was the suspect. Volusia County Sheriff's Office said that he was smashing out windows to break into the homes and then left and broke into another house. And the body camera footage released by the sheriff's office shows him running from the deputy, literally doing all these things, jumping in a pool, climbing out of the pool, jumping on the trampoline. It took four deputies to get custody of this guy, and he was kicking and hitting them. One of the deputies was cut on the arm. And in addition to being naked, the sheriff's office, this is a real story. He was covered in wheel bearing grease, peppermint oil, and blood. They believe he may have been under the influence of an unknown substance. And then it took three medical professionals to secure him on a stretcher. And if you're watching the simulcast, Juan's showing the blurred out guy laying on the trampoline. Golly. So he took three medical professionals to secure him on a stretcher for evaluation. So he faces charges, two counts of occupied burglary, three counts of battery on a law enforcement officer, two counts of criminal mischief and resisting arrest with violence. I don't really have any words. I hope they clean that trampoline before somebody's kid gets on it, though. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's see. This Miami area beach is full of feces, and the health department is warning people. Florida Health Department, a special type of bacteria I can't pronounce, was in water samples from Crandon Park. It was such high levels that they actually, Miami-Dade County, issued a press release saying stay out of the water because of the duty. Uh-oh. And not like DUTY either. I mean, it's very bad. And they said that swimmers could actually become sick. Uh-oh. There's actual literal feces in the water, and I don't know. Is it spring break? Is that what it was? And no, like everyone just used it as their loo. I don't know. Stick with us. We got our third hour on the way. What a way to end this hour. Good heavens.
Think that a judge in Texas should be able to say that an FDA's determination about a drug is invalid?
I don't. In fact, when you look at the court case and the ruling here, the judge used an act or a law from the 1800s that was overturned by the Supreme Court. At least the Supreme Court decided in 1983, over 100 years later, roughly, that law was unconstitutional. And that was the basis for his argument last week. And look, this is an FDA-approved drug. Whether you agree with its usage or not, that's not your decision. That is the FDA's decision.
So welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour, Dana Lash here with you. That's Nancy Mace, who was talking with CNN, saying that she thinks that the FDA should ignore this ruling from this Texas judge that came out a couple of days ago. And it was in Amarillo, this judge in the case sided with these medical groups that were, that were challenging the federal regulation of the drug, ruling that both the initial, according to Politico, approval of the pills in 2000, as well as more as recent FDA decisions, they were saying that they had left room for appeal. This case isn't done. They said that the adverse effects could from chemical abortion drugs could overwhelm medical system, consume crucial limited medical resources. This is one of the groups argued. This is the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They were saying there's been a big fight over the abortion pill. And it's interestingly enough, there was also a big fight over the over-the-counter birth control pill, which Democrats completely opposed when Republicans tried to do it, which I still to this day don't understand, because why would you, the abortion pill, I guess, was okay for them, but not. So Merrick Garland, I'm looking at the date on this story. This is from Politico. Merrick Garland had weighed in, said that the problem with this is that it's not done. I mean, there's still. I mean, they have the appeals process. I mean, there's still the order was stayed. There's time for appeal. So there's multiple steps that can still be taken. So I don't think that you can argue with this particular case that there is somehow some sort of that there isn't an adequate remedy for that. So the response here, though, and I don't dislike Nancy Mace at all. This judge, a New York Times piece, I'll put this in your prep ruling too, had more of the arguments that were made in this case. They invalidated the FDA approval of that pill. Mifepristone is what it's called. That's the decision she's talking about. So he was invalidating the FDA approval, and she was saying, well, it's FDA approved. Excuse me. Whether you agree with its usage or not, she said that's your decision. I do have some caution here. I had a friend who had made a similar observation because you still have ways to remedy this issue. You go through the appeals process. I don't like ruling or legislating or anything of that manner by fiat. And I feel as though that may set up a bad precedent. Because, I mean, you have rule of law, and then you have the flex of executive power, which is what we've seen from this administration. It's what we've seen from the CDC and the ATF, et cetera, et cetera. And if you just start ignoring rule of law, I think that allows for even more of that. It just encourages that behavior. And I don't want Republicans to be the people who are kicking that off. I think we have enough of it. And the fact that, they can still appeal and that the judge stayed their order so that to allow for that process to play out, I think is important. You cannot trade the legitimacy and the equal authority of rule of law in a republic to try to get some sort of fast satisfaction, immediate gratification, some kind of convenience. That is not a trade you make in a republic. And I mean, with all respect to her, and again, I don't dislike her at all. I just think that she's wrong here. And I think that it's dangerous to advocate for getting rid of this, you know, equal application or rule of law. I mean, there's a reason why this process is still ongoing, because there's still a process. It's not done. But what happens, I mean, and again, substitute for this pill or however you want to do it, put another variable in its place, right? I mean, put another variable in. What if it's immigration, right? What if it's about Second Amendment rights? Are we just, I mean, you cannot set this precedent to where you're just going to ignore the rule of law in favor of a quick fix. And I feel that that's what she's arguing here. I don't think I'm being too harsh, Kane. No, I think this is, I mean, you see that, am I being like too suspicious? I mean, I just see that precedent being established here. Yeah. I get the ruling. I agree with the pro-life aspect of it. But I also worry, because that's a variable, and that formula is, it can be applied to anything. Absolutely. I mean, I get it. I feel like there's some people on the right, and I put it up, I say that it's like the NatCon thing, that there are people on the right that I think are just so fed up, and they feel like the only way that they can do anything is to use government to get what they want. But by using government to get what you want, you're expanding government to get what you want. Therefore, you're kind of fulfilling what your opponents are desiring, are you not? It's hard to be limited government, and it's difficult, I get, for people to resist the temptation of doing to the other side what they've done to you, but you've got to. I mean, look, that's why people have been winning elections in certain states. Just saying. We've been talking, actually last hour, we were talking about this case of this Army sergeant and the self-defense issue with the... this is in Austin, Texas. It was back in all the BLM stuff in 2020. During that summer, and I had explained how in Texas it's a little bit different than some other states, because Texas, they have a board of parole pardons, and the board can make recommendations that the governor can act on, but the governor doesn't get to make the decision of a pardon, etc., himself or herself. And so Greg Abbott, for instance, had already issued a statement saying that he's asked the parole board to look at this case. And he says that he's looking forward to signing a pardon. So he's asking them to look at it, and he's suggesting, I look forward to signing a pardon, encouraging them on that. Now, the governor can appoint, the governor appoints the people on the board. So I would imagine if, you know, Abbott's asking for this, I would say that there's a probably because he appoints the board, there's a higher likelihood than not of that happening. That is weird, though, how that is set up in Texas. It's very different from other states, and there was a lot of heat over that too over the weekend, because a lot of heat after that guilty verdict came in. I just don't understand how this Daniel Perry guy is guilty. Uber driver driving in shorts and flip-flops at a stoplight, finds himself in the middle of a BLM riot, and then the guy, what was his name, Daniel Foster, Garrett Foster, has a AK-47, had already gotten in trouble with law enforcement, apparently, according to officers that testified during this trial, because the guy pointed his AK-47 at other people, other passerby. And so he points it at Daniel Perry sitting in his car. Perry thinks he's going to get shot and killed. Somebody points an AK-47 at you. Yeah, you think you're going to get shot and killed. Daniel Perry defends himself. And then he gets convicted of murder because the Soros-backed DA in Austin was hell-bent on getting a win for the left. No matter what, you have all of these out-of-control DAs, and it's completely accurate to say, because all of this stuff is available because people with their 990s and everything else on this thing we call the internet. You can go to Open Secrets. I've linked this stuff in newsletters for my email subscribers at Substack over at Chapter and Verse. And you can actually go and see all the money that Soros has been spending to try to really reform in the worst way America's judicial system to encourage the breakdown of law and order. And so this, I mean, it's all out there. Well, everything that he donates to, it's all out there. So I am, I mean, I hope that the board acts, because this is self-defense, and self-defense has been under fire for quite some time. You have people who can go out and riot and burn down buildings, and apparently they can brandish, you know, their... I don't even know if that guy was a legal carrier, Foster. I don't even know if he was a legal carrier. But Perry should be pardoned, for sure. Now, one of the things we're going to discuss as we go towards our time with Stephen Yates is what's this really, really scary development. I think it's nerve-wracking to watch France crumble in front of China. And that's what's been happening. As you know, we talked about last week when Emmanuel Macron and the head of the EU were over visiting Xi Jinping. And now Macron is saying that, well, Europe has to reduce its dependency. He's saying this, but in the worst way. He's saying that Europe must reduce its dependency on the United States, not to add more of their own, not to spend more on their own self-defense, instead of having United States do it with NATO. All these European nations, they want to be in NATO and they want the United States to come help if something happens, but they treat it like it's a welfare slush fund, and that barely meeting the 2% of their GDP on their own defense. It's asinine. So they said that they want to reduce their dependency on the United States, but only so far as getting dragged into a confrontation between China and the U.S. over Taiwan. And so he spoke to some French journalists who work at the European Politico and was saying that, you know, the question Europeans need to answer is in our interest to accelerate this. You know, we don't want to be America's followers. But yet he wants, as he has tried to persuade our current administration, and I would think successfully, wants the United States to essentially subsidize everything that's happening with Ukraine. I mean, this is weird. It sounded like he was just repeating. It's like Xi Jinping wrote his answers to these politicians. Because I read this article. I mean, it sounded like, I mean, he even, remember how we were saying that they were looking to have their cap on crude and that they wanted an exception and it was granted. But he also, that was a big red flag that came out last week. And then he told Politico, he said that Europe needs to reduce its dependence on the extraterritoriality of the U.S. dollar. So what does that sound like to you? This on the heels of Russia using Chinese currency, Brazil saying that they no longer are practicing the strategic ambiguity of Taiwan and China. They're only recognizing Taiwan as China. There's a lot of stuff. France is crumbling. And of course, all of this is happening while the French have been rioting all across the country, all across their country. We're going to talk to Stephen Yates about all of this.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Wow. So apparently the prices at McDonald's, apparently the most expensive value meal in the country. Some of these locations in the United States are causing kind of a stir. One social media person said that a Connecticut McDonald's location, the price of a Big Mac combo meal was $16.89. Some of the other menu prices seen in the video exceeded $18. Oh my gosh, the high prices. And McDonald's, they're preparing for mass layoffs. They're based in Chicago. Wall Street Journal reported it. They've got layoffs coming. Even when McDonald's is, you know, hit, golly. Ugh. Daily Mail, which I hate, but this is an interesting story. They say that experts are now claiming humans could achieve immortality by 2030. And one futurist says we'll be able to attend our own funerals in a new body. That sounds horrible. And a life of a never-ending life with all of, not you people, but, you know, all these people. That sounds like hell. That's what hell is. That's what it is. Why would anybody want to be immortal? Also, by the way, what a presumptive thing. I'm so great. I'm such a blessing to this world. I'm going to, those people I think should be the first to go, right? I don't know. I'm not interested in any of this. They said that cell rejuvenation, reanimating the brain, I don't know. You know, I'm just going to say Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein for a reason. And, you know, also, this U.S. bank lending has slumped. This story coming out of Yahoo Finance. This has been actually by most on record in the final weeks of March. The U.S. bank lending contracted by the biggest on record last 2 weeks of this last month. I know, more bad signs for the economy. Stephen Yates next.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Are you concerned that they are increasingly escalatory every time they carry out these exercises?
Yes. The Chinese military threat against Taiwan has been real, and it has been increasing. For 2 days already, the Chinese mounted large-scale air and sea military exercises against Taiwan. And these kinds of military threat against Taiwan should not be tolerated by the international community.
No, they shouldn't. And especially, they shouldn't be tolerated by one of America's oldest allies. I mean, actually, it is our oldest ally. I mean, we were, you know, besties with them against the British monarchy back in the day. And now you have Emmanuel Macron, who, I don't know why, but he's being such a kiss-up to Xi Jinping. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, bottom of this third hour. We were talking about the troubling response that Macron had said with regards to Taiwan when he was talking to two French reporters writing for the European version of Politico. And he was saying that European nations should not just be America's followers. And he also added that Europe faces the potential of being dragged into, is how he put it, any kind of confrontation with China over Taiwan. And he also said that, you know, he didn't believe really that they should be involved in things that don't concern them. In this very wide, like very deep dive interview with European Politico. So, of course, we had to immediately go to Stephen Yates, who I can almost see inside his head. The, you know how they would in comic strips that when characters curse, that's what's happening in his thought bubble above his head. Stephen Yates, who is a foreign policy expert, specifically China is his wheelhouse, senior fellow at America First Policy Institute and chair of the China Policy Initiative. Okay, my friend. So what happened with Emmanuel Macron and immediately now they're cool on Taiwan? What's happening?
Well, it's, I guess the diplomatic word would be, it's unfortunate, but you're right about the bubble above my head cursing in French, although I don't speak a lick of French.
I know a few
probably
choice
never
words.
Will now. I'm going to go back to calling things freedom fries and all that stuff, because this is really, really, it is the worst of the European example of basically going abroad and kissing the ring of an emperor, suing for appeasement, just looking for some filthy lucre. Don't pay any attention about that genocide against the Muslims. That apparently is not their concern.
Right.
That reminds me of that droll guy from Silicon Valley that said, this is below my line. And so I think Macron is now Mr. International below my line. And I just find the whole thing disgusting and also highly hypocritical and galling, given that it is Europe that has dragged Americans into all kinds of things historically. Yes, we're grateful for our revolution. The funny attired people help us beat the Brits. But at this point, they really got to step back up and realize, are you going to be a real nation or just a suck up internationally? Are you going to bend to Russia and ask for us to defend you? I think Americans are kind of fed up with that. Mm. Then you turn around to Asia, where we have a lot economically and otherwise at stake. And you say, oh, not my concern. Well, good luck on your next trade negotiation with a real American president.
And that's a great point, too, because I was wondering, what was the purpose of Macron and the EU, one of the deputy heads of the EU, visiting for, he spent 6 hours with Xi Jinping. What was the purpose of that? I mean, I know at one point they said, oh, well, he was trying to convince him of, you know, I guess pushing Russia on Ukraine. And obviously Xi Jinping was not going to do that. That didn't take 6 hours, though.
No, none of these meetings have to take that long. The excuse usually is, well, there's time for interpretation. So you cut that in half. That's still a pretty long meeting. And how long does it take to say, hey, will you help us out over here? And she says, no. And then you say, hey, will you buy more of our stuff? And he says, maybe. And then you go home. And so that's, it really doesn't need to take 3 hours or 6 hours. There's no need to actually translate. You can probably convey it all in body language and not use the interpreters at all. It involves basically taking a passive body position and then limpering home. That's what Macron just did. And I think that there is a word for that I can't say on TV or radio.
Is this going to spark a trend with other European countries, do you think? Because, you know, down in looking in South America, too, you had Brazil. We talked about this last week, who got really weird on. They stopped recognizing Taiwan and they're now leaning towards the, you know, China's version of events and the one China policy. Is this a domino effect? And are we going to see more of this, do you think?
Well, I think that there is some pushback in other parts of Europe. I mean, not all Europeans think that Macron speaks for them. And it turns out not all French people think Macron speaks for them.
The ones writing, for sure.
And so in a way, that's kind of nice market feedback that could be happening. But we've talked a number of times. There are consequences for American weakness. There's consequences for people basically giving this very passive approach to authoritarians abroad. Xi Jinping doesn't sit people down for a deep discourse on human history and philosophy. The guy has a third grade education. He's a schoolyard bully. All he's about is, can I take advantage of you or not? And that's basically all there is in his worldview. And so he's all for putting his country first. He's all for using the race card to try to animate ethnically Chinese people around the world to serve him, not the countries in which they're citizens. And so, but this is not highbrow stuff. But when we have weak leaders that go forward with no real agenda other than please buy more of our stuff, that makes the world more dangerous. And yes, we have the risks of more dominoes going. I hope that Europeans will be fed up with these bad Europeans and do something about it.
I hope so as well. Talking with Stephen Yates over the issue, Macron meeting with China, and of course over the weekend too, China had, I guess, this war simulation. They were simulating precision strikes on a number of key targets in Taiwan and also simulating basically surrounding the entire island. Beijing says this is a stern warning. They think it's, I guess, like a response to, you know, Taiwan's president meeting with Kevin McCarthy, House Speaker, last week. 45 planes, they said Saturday, either crossed the Taiwan Strait median. I mean, there were 45 planes. I think that's a new record.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a contrast. You have Xi Jinping going to Moscow and meeting with Vladimir Putin and essentially saying the quiet part out loud on purpose in front of cameras about we're the ones driving the events, we're making the change, and we're basically ganging up to stick it to the Americans and the West. And how many military aircraft flew in protest of that consequential shift in the world, that kind of provocative statement between those two leaders? But supposedly the democratically elected president of Taiwan, who has all the charisma of a librarian, she is not very threatening of a human being. She goes to the Reagan Library, which is where librarians should go, and talks with our elected leaders. And that somehow scares the pants off of the world's biggest, baddest commie. In some way, it makes them look really small. And on the other hand, no one's doing anything about it. So the foreign minister, Joseph Wu, is a friend, a very sensible guy. Of course, the people of Taiwan are concerned. The Japanese are concerned, too. Mm-hmm. But what is our leadership going to do to help them take care of their part of the world so we don't have to intervene there? I don't want us to have to do that, but we got to stand up or this is going to come to us, because the Chinese are not going to be contented to just fritter around the edges. They're coming for our way of life.
That's a good point. The CCP definitely has the will and the resources. Talking to our friend Stephen Yates, you can find him on Twitter at YatesComms. You mentioned the Japanese as well. Wall Street Journal story, China's repeated detention of Japanese citizens raises tensions. I don't even know why you would at all go to China to do any kind of business right now. He's not an old man, but he's, you know, an elderly business guy. And I mean, they detained him for a number of years. He gets out of a taxi at the Beijing airport and they walked a few steps and they surrounded him and then took him into a white van.
Yeah, well, the Chinese are, their government is inflaming all of this by the world's healthiest dose of disinformation, but they're stuck in a nearly 100-year-old movie and they keep playing it over and over and over. In this day and age, no one is scared of the Japanese. These are the people that invent stuff and sell stuff. They're very, very clean and nice people to deal with. They're not really provoking anything. Any disaster happens around the world, they're there to donate, help, build. I mean, there's so much history and development behind what happened in World War II that I think died a lot with my granddad's generation. It happened. We acknowledge it. But my goodness, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, is just like stuck in this circular logic of all of that. And they're brutalizing these people. And so you have lots of Japanese people who still do business over there like you. I just wouldn't go, but they're still
Tesla's
there.
Tesla's opening a, they're opening a plant in Shanghai. They're opening a megapack battery factory in Shanghai there that capable of producing 10,000 megapacks a year. I don't think that they gave a date for when it's opening, but that's happening. I look at it like that. There's two things, kind of big questions or big topics of discussion. The right at some point is going to have a conversation with itself. What does the response look like? Because of all the talk of imperialistic and, you know, desires, et cetera, China actually has the resources to do it. And clearly they have the intent. So what does that look like in an American response? And then also, you know, with I mean, just like the, how do you, I give the example of World War II. You mentioned Japan. After World War II, after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, we were able to immediately repair our ships that were damaged. And just within a few months, they were back out in the sea, shocking Japan. They were shocked. They didn't realize we were going to respond the way we did in Coral Sea. It was shocking. I don't think we have the capability to do that now. So much of our manufacturing is dependent upon China. So how do you even respond over Taiwan to a country that you are so dependent on for manufacturing? We wouldn't be able to have those same results after something like that.
Right. Well, I think that the only choice we have, and it's whether we're going to choose it or be forced into it, is returning to some core principles that begin with self-reliance and independence, and then building our economic and other livelihoods around reliable partners and friends. We have to give up this delusion that somehow there's a global ideology that's going to bend an arc of history. I mean, that's just professor fantasy talk. There are no dictators in the world that go, oh my gosh, this bad idea I had, this is not written about that way by professors, and so I can't do this. And so we have to just give up on this false hope that rules and norms are going to do anything. The only thing that changes the world is power, and we better build that power among ourselves safely with our friends, and the rest of the world is going to want to be part of that, not with these other guys if we get our house in order. But we're kind of knocked back to first principles and reconstructing things from the ground up, if you ask me.
I agree with you, and we do not have an administration that's willing to do it. And I think even it's going to even take more than you're going to have to get rid of a lot of bureaucracy to even get through a lot of this. But yeah, I feel like especially with the Green New Deal and all of that, everything being pushed by this administration, it's a way to weaken the United States and make us completely subservient and dependent upon China. I mean, honestly, if I was going to do that, that would be the vehicle through which I would do it. If I was a foreign agent, that would be the exact way that I would do it. Because as you said, you don't have to have a military to take down countries. It's good to have it, but you can just destroy them financially, destroy them with energy. Last word for you.
Way too many of our people follow right along.
Completely. Oh gosh, what a depressing, this is a depressing Monday, depressing topic. We got to find
sunshine.
I'm telling you what, we got to like have memes or something next time we have you on. Make fun of Xi Jinping with memes. Stephen Yates at Yates.com. So appreciate what you do. I really do. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
So, there's a new Easter bunny at the White House. They did the Easter egg roll today. Was it potatoes that they rolled? If you're watching the simulcast of the program, Juan's showing us. The press just asked the Easter bunny about Trump indictments. Now, Hunter Biden is also at the White House, giving a whole new meaning to peeps. As Kane noted, this is Daddy's pixie stick. You get your own pixie stick. This is a special one for Daddy. He's there literally at the White House. Oh my gosh, you guys, I cannot imagine how untouchable you must be after so many icky videos come out about your flabby ass with all these prostitutes in a deprivation tank, smoking crack, doing all this other stuff, and you show up at the Easter egg roll with the Easter bunny. You just show up there. You're there. Everybody has seen everything, right? Do you not talk about it? Like, how does that work? It's just weird. It's weird. Like, could you maybe just have a little self-awareness? It's nasty. And he still looks nasty. He doesn't he? He's like, he just doesn't look well. And for a number of reasons. So they had the Easter egg roll, I guess. I don't know. Were they doing potatoes or eggs? Did we ever figure that out? I don't even know. They got the new Easter bunny that was there. And they, he did say that he said at the Easter egg roll earlier that he plans to run in the 2024 election. So I don't know. There's one video going where a kid screamed when Biden came towards them. It's just funny. And someone else said it reminds them of this Politico headline from 8 years ago when Obama was telling the kids bees are good and they screamed. I don't know. It's just funny. I like the traditions. I think you can do more than one thing at a time. I realize there's some serious stuff going on in the world. And we now have the same opinion of Emmanuel Macron that the French do. But I do think it's important to maintain, you know, traditions like, you know, Easter egg roll and things that are uniquely, you know, just totally American things. That's incredibly important to maintain stuff like that. And maybe not have Hunter Biden there because just, you know, it's gross. And you don't want to get the kids to get the wrong pixie stick, if you know what I mean. All right. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
All right, it's got to be AOC. I mean, she has been saying nothing but stupid things for the last week. And so we'll just get a couple of these. Here's one of her talking about the Supreme Court. Somehow they have lost their legitimacy. Listen to that.
I know that there are calls for Chief Justice Roberts to initiate an investigation. I do not think that this court any longer has the legitimacy, especially after the Supreme Court leak last year, which never came to a conclusion.
She's all upset about Clarence Thomas, so she's going to conflate and make things up.
It's no one actually. I mean, her opinion is about as valuable as probably her drinks that she made when she was slinging them as a bartender. We're done now, folks. I'll be on Jesse Waters tonight, Fox 6 p.m. Central. Back with you tomorrow.